I'm Chris Lydon from Open Source. This week, we're happy to recommend the Long Form podcast, a weekly conversation with journalists and writers. If you like our show, you're going to love theirs. Check out their recent interview with the New York Times Magazine writer, Adrienne Chen, and visit their website at longform.org. I'm Christopher Lydon, handing off this open source podcast to the Omni reader and radio producer Max Larkin in conversation with the cult novelist Leonard Gardner about his book of 1969, Fat City. Max, it's your show. Let me just testify, though, that this side of Harold Bloom, we don't know anybody who reads as widely and as passionately as you do, and it's the combination that makes it interesting. And besides, you introduced us all to the amazing Leonard Gardner. How did that happen?
There's something special about Leonard Gardner, and I think there's something special about his book, Fat City. It has its avid fans. I'm one of them. It's a book about boxing on its surface, but it's a book that seems to sum up a whole world of American literature before it. Steinbeck's books of field work, you know, Grapes of Wrath and Dubious Battle, it seems to capture a little bit of Hemingway and the Hemingway hero of people battling, particularly men, battling against the odds. There's a shortage of real good female roles in the book, but it's got a lot of noir to it, a lot of hard-boiled, fatalistic California stories, but there's also a little anticipation of Rocky, but it's not about championship boxing. It's just about boxing as a way to get out of the drudgery of Stockton, California. It's about trying to be somebody. And we talk a little bit about why that means so much to him.
We come away from your conversation, Max, with the feeling that boxing is not so different in all of those respects from writing, which was his game after all, but let it rip.
What is it about Fat City from your biased perspective that kind of gets inside people's heads?
It's quite different from other boxing stories. I wrote about the non-championship level of boxing. I grew up in Stockton, California, which was a very good fight town. And only one guy that I can recall never got up to the point of getting a world championship fight. Jesse Flores was our local hero, but he didn't do very well and got knocked out fairly early. There were some hard-fought fights there in Stockton, and quite a number of the fighters actually were farm workers. One of our stars was a Filipino fighter, Johnny Ifon, and he'd work out in the fields, you know. He was known to be an expert asparagus cutter, so during asparagus season, he'd be out there working. There were people like that who weren't making big money, but were making fair money and maybe had jobs on the side. That's what my title, Fat City, actually was referring to. The good times up at the top. I'm in Fat City. And it was just what my guys would hope for, what they were aspiring to. And it was just like smoke. It was just this dream that they couldn't reach. If you read Ring magazine, few names the top of the list, you know, the champions and the contenders. And then there's the hundreds, thousands around the world whose names you've never heard of, you'll never see them in print. I wanted to get some of those people in the book, you know, put a name out in front of the world that nobody would have ever heard of.
Americans can be easily transfixed by the stories of the truly exceptional, the genius businessman, the genius artist, the athletic virtuoso. But there's a moment when you sort of turn the camera a little bit and you look at all the people waiting at the door, hoping one day to be that person. And you know that the odds are just very, very long. What is it about you that wants to tell that story as opposed to the heavyweight champion of the world story?
Well, maybe I wasn't a kid anymore when I wrote it, you know. If I'd written it at 15, I would have written about the heavyweight champion of the world. But I just saw another element. I went to hundreds of pro and amateur fights over the years, and I guess I sympathize with the guys who really had to put up a struggle. I had friends who were boxing journalists who would invite me along to sit in the first row right up next to the ring, and blood would come flying out over your clothes, you know, drawing that kind of blood from his opponents.
So when did you start boxing?
Well, my father had been, according to him, and I believe in him, a real hot shot amateur. And I did spar with him when he was like 50-something and I was like 15. And he was very, very clever, hard to hit, fought in the old-fashioned style, leaning back. I remember being fascinated by his stories. And one line I never forgot, I even put it in the novel, was, "They couldn't lay a glove on me." He used to box for the San Francisco Olympic Club, and he told me, he said, I couldn't get tired. I'd tire one guy out, and I'd go on to the next. And, you know, you grow up with stories like that. You think, God, it's great to be a boxer. I had been a real sickly child, and he was very good to me. Take me hunting and fishing and whenever we wanted to go, and I think he wanted me to build up a little bit. He got me a really fine punching bag, and we built a professional kind of platform for it to hang from, and he got me gloves. And I boxed for a few years in the backyard and punched the bag every day. Finally, I went to the gym where the real boxers worked out. I came and went, you know. I didn't fight there very long, a couple of months. Had one bout. I went to Mexico and spent a whole lot of time in the gyms. Wonderful material was falling my way, you know. Mexico is just a hotbed of boxing, and maybe even was more so then.
Still is, kind of.
I went to bouts every week, and I'd hang around the gym, and a guy couldn't even punch a bag there, a pro, you know, without a big crowd of kids and teenagers standing around him. And when the guys sparred, people lining the ropes, you know, outside the ring. And it was extremely popular. And, you know, I wasn't researching a novel. I was just engaging in things that interested me. I accumulated really wonderful material for Fat City.
You said recently that you reread the book when it was republished.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck you as a little darker than you imagined.
Yeah, I think when I wrote it, I just felt I'm writing reality, you know. And when I reread it very recently, there was a bit of grimness and darkness to it, quite a bit that I had forgotten about. I can't explain that. It must have been the mood I was in at the time as an unknown writer who maybe getting nowhere, just like the fighters I was writing about. I had no way of expecting any kind of success. I first started out when I was quite a bit younger, trying to get short stories published in magazines, and I couldn't get arrested, you know. I just thought I had to write it as well as I possibly could to make sure that I got it published. And
it worked.
It worked. I got published. Even got nominated for the National Book Award, so I guess I did okay with it.
Would you mind reading a little bit?
Sure, I'd read it. Oh, yeah. This is really the only chapter about this young guy, Wes Haynes. He should have known all along that he was nothing. Boxers were men in other towns, in big cities, far from this car parked in the darkness alongside the highway between fields of vegetables. Resting his cheek against the cold window, he thought of killing himself. But years ago, standing beside his father's legs in a crowd on a night sidewalk, he had seen a dead man profiled in a puddle of blood, his eye dumbfounded. And Wes knew that if he was going to be killed, he was not going to do it himself. They would have to come and get him, and he would club them and choke them and shoot them, and then he would run. Wes went around the house to the back door. He felt his way to his room, undressed to the sound of his brother's even breathing, got into bed and lay waiting. He heard nothing. Soon he rose and tiptoed to the front room, where he looked out the window and saw the car still there, clear in the first light of dawn that filled him with all the desolate reality of defeat. Quietly, in dread of waking his family, Wes crept back to his bed.
It's so sad.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
What does it mean to come back from about having been bested?
Coming back after a big loss?
Yeah.
We wouldn't have gone into it if we didn't think we had greatness in us or something, you know. We were going to be superior somehow. So defeats are shocks. And maybe you make one little mistake. You're a tenth of a second too slow getting a punch off or something, and you get whacked with a hell of a counterpunch. It's bewildering. This is why I did this chapter the way I did, where Wes is kind of lost. He doesn't even know what town he's in. It's part of the disorientation, you know, of loss. Maybe he had delusions of grandeur, and then there's a tremendous letdown.
At the same time you're writing, the wheels are coming off the American wagon. It was intense Vietnam time.
Yeah.
It was a schizophrenic moment in America, and we were being handed interminable defeat. And was any of that surround getting into the book?
I think very much so. Part of the whole protest movement, everything seemed to be included, you know, like you wanted fair pay for farm workers and, you know, get out of Vietnam and all of that. I felt devoted to the cause, you know, and I certainly was against exploitation of farm workers, and I still am, and it still goes on. I had a bit of a social purpose as I wrote, and I think that helped me choose my material and kept me going, you know, until I got it finished.
It's a boxing book, but it's almost a labor book. It's almost a Steinbeck book in Dubious Battle or Grapes of Wrath about a lot of hard work under a hot sun for 90 cents an hour.
Yeah, I didn't have to force this. There were boxers, including this main eventer, who, when they weren't training, were out working in the fields. In fact, they would work in the fields and they would come to the gym in the afternoon. I remember they'd come in all dirty with the straw hats and all covered in this peat dust that constantly is blowing around in Stockton. Some of these guys were just very strong men who could work all day out in the sun doing stoop labor and then come to the gym, knock each other around, you know, get in shape for their fights. I got interested in writing when I was about 14, and I remember there'd be a lot of really poor people on the streets, farm workers, in the late afternoon would be by the hundreds, just standing on the sidewalk with nothing to do, watching the cars go by. It was a big part of the life of my little town, and I wanted to write about it since I was in my teens. 17, I started to work in a gas station. Just happened to be in Skid Row, but I knew a kid that worked there, and when they needed another attendant, he told me about it, and I got the job. Then I got acquainted with winos who would come and stand around the station, and I wanted to write about winos. And when I started writing Fat City, I put a lot of pieces together that I had, you know, collected and thought of writing about someday.
There's a sort of sense of personal, almost duty, that you have to tell this story?
Well, I did want to be a spokesman, I guess, for farm workers and boxers, but I don't really think that was what was driving me. I had the ambition to be a writer. I wanted to write fiction, and once I got in gear, I don't think I was kidding myself, you know? I thought, I got something here. I can do a good book. I just have to keep going and keep going and not to do like a lot of people who maybe wish they could write a book, and it gets tough and you can quit, you know. I just knew what I wanted, and I just wanted to be a writer, and I wanted to write a novel, and I kept going. And things worked out in my personal life where that was possible. like my wife and I split up before we had children. So, you know, if I'd had children after I began Fat City, God knows, I'd have to get a real job rather than my two-day-a-week parking attendant job, probably.
Don't have kids being the real advice.
That's not the moral of the story. I have a lot of writer friends who had children, and they seem to think that is a spur toward creativity.
You know, for Joan Didion and Dennis Johnson, rather later, the National Book Award, for people to adore this debut novel in the way that they did, why didn't you write more? You had had an enormous success.
Well, I don't really know. My agent seemed to know how these things affect people. He seemed to feel that I probably felt I had to follow it with something as good or better, and that froze me up. I let enough time go by where then I was desperate for money, too. And people might think there's big money in novels, but I didn't find that to be so. And I wasn't even offered an advance on my next one. If I asked for it, I probably would have got it. I don't know. But I got the movie offer to write the screenplay for Fat City. So I took it. And then there were other movie offers. I worked on a couple of other films. And time was getting away from me, and I kept needing money. And then I worked on NYPD Blue, and I could have given you this interview with the understanding that you wouldn't ask me why I didn't write another novel, because I can't answer it. And it's painful to always have to feel that you're a combination of failure and success. I mean, my book now is getting a lot of attention, so I'm successful in some way, and whatever in the other. I won't say I'm a failure.
It's a terrific book. It's a gift, and particularly a gift, I think, because it's, I think you could say it's about desperation, but I think maybe it'd be better to say it's about striving and what it means to do that when you're surrounded by all these indications that maybe you should stop, or hollow victories, the kind of terribly resounding defeats you read about, bracing, humiliating. You come home and you don't want your family to wake up because then you have to explain what happened to you. But it's humane. I mean, it seems to me that if we're going to be serious as Americans, we should strive with the understanding that there's going to be a lot of disappointment and frustration on the way.
Are you speaking of boxing or riding or both?
To what extent are they the same thing? Struggling against the universe, and you're trying to do something great. And sometimes you only get a chance to do one great thing. Are they the same in your mind, boxing and writing?
There's a lot of similarity, I think, in the desperation that I gave Billy Tully. I think I was feeling that as a writer. No validation, no success. And, you know, I felt something driving me to try to get some kind of recognition.
It's a novel without bad guys. People are negligent, and they're mean-spirited, and they're deluded, or they're perplexed. And this comes through especially in the film. These are good-hearted, hard-working, deeply true, moral people who are in a pretty bad situation a lot of the time. Where does that come from?
Well, I appreciate your recognizing that. It was definitely my intention to leave out the bad guys. No fixed fights, no gangsters, no murdered fighter because he wouldn't take a dive, and all the things that I used to see as a kid in boxing movies. I think I tried hard not to have anybody evil or crooked. Even the manager, when he doesn't give Billy Tully all his money, he tells him, I'll give it to you weekly. I'll pay your expenses. He doesn't trust him because he's a former alcoholic. He just figures, I give him all this purse money, he'll just go off on a big drunk and he won't go to the gym anymore. So, yeah, I'm kind of proud of that. There's not a crook or a rat in the book.
There's so much film and writing about, so much fictionalizing about boxers. It'd be interesting to hear, who are these people who choose this very vulnerable, sometimes shameful, often hurtful, literally painful path to getting stronger, proving yourself? What sort of person goes in for boxing?
You know, I just kept training on and off for years. I was at Newman's Gym in San Francisco when I was 50 years old. I was still working out, punching a bag, and I looked young for my years. And one of the trainers or managers came up to me and said, you know, hey, kid, do you want a manager? And I started laughing. I said, I'm 50 years old. I can't fight anymore. But that's how long the bug had me, you know. I didn't train every day, every week of the year, but I would go back, train for 2-3 months or something and quit in the next year or two. I'd be back again. I couldn't get it out of my system. And my father was the same way. You know, when my father was about 75, he had a speed bag up in the attic, and he'd be out there, and you know, brrr, he could really make that thing go. You get the bug. There's something about it. You just can't walk away from it.
I'd like to sort of account for that bug, and maybe the way to put it is, it's a person biting into an activity that it's going to last them a lifetime. Once a boxer, always a boxer. But who's a boxer? What makes a boxer?
Well, I've thought it must be an instinct to fight. There's just something satisfying about throwing punches. I'll just find myself shadow boxing around the bedroom now, you know. The more you do it, though, the more your muscles are trained to do it. That's one of the reasons you can't stop it, I think. And there's got to be an instinct to fight, it seems to me.
Where does it come from, the instinct?
An instinct. It's the same instinct. Like to run if a pack of wolves are after you or something.
What does it mean then? I don't know if it's the evident corruption of the sport or if it's the violence of it or seeing the violence of it in high definition, but what does it mean that America, at least the sort of civilized coastal America, seems to be walking away in some ways from boxing?
Well, I don't know how civilized America is anyway. But we...
That was in quotes.
We're still a kind of primitive country, I think. And there's a lot of frustration, I'm sure, in Americans. It's pretty natural to have some fighting instinct, I think. But really, if you look around now, there are very few people that want to box. You know, 50, 100 years ago, there were a lot more potential fighters in our country.
Where do we think all the fighting instinct goes now?
Well, they don't like to take it anymore, I think. It's fun to hit somebody, but not fun to get hit back. I think you really have to be pretty desperate to put up with all the punches you take in order to be a fighter.
Leonard Gardner, author of Fat City, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Well, I thank you very much. That was a good way to end, I think, on taking punches.
Taking punches.
You can hear more conversations on arts, ideas, and politics at radioopensource.org.